Lights out, we're underway. Motorsport Republica podcast.
G'day guys, welcome back to another very, very special episode with a special guest, our first motocross rider, off-road rider, Kyle Webster, mate. Welcome aboard.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Mate, it's this is exciting. We're just talking about how we're very novice dirt bike riders, so it's going to be good to speak to you and try and lend us some of your knowledge so then we can seriously hurt ourselves on a motocross track or in the bush.
Pretty good at that already, I think.
Yeah, you hurt yourself, didn't you? Didn't you do your shoulder or something?
Yeah, watched my mate do a jump and then I was like, oh, I can do that, and end up over the bars and in a sling for 4 weeks. So, good fun. But here to tell the tale.
It's bad. We're just talking about how fit as well motocross riders are. And I was telling Kyle, Daniel, one of our early episodes, we were talking about how fit motocross riders are, and we did a TikTok video or whatever of it, and it blew up. Everyone was going crazy, like, you guys don't get the credit that you deserve. And I want to ask, what do you do for training? Obviously, heaps of track riding, but are you doing cycling, mountain biking, I think, is probably popular, running? What are you doing?
Yeah, a bit of everything, really. A lot of riding. We ride normally 4 days a week, practicing, and then racing on the weekends, so it's a lot of bike time. But training is, everyone's a little bit different. I'm assuming that's with all sports, but I try and do like a bit of a variety of things: running, cycling, mountain biking when we can, and some gym stuff really. And it normally, that's sort of 6 days of the week, so between that and riding, it's a lot.
Bloody oath. It'd be a lot. Do you pull up, like, are you now to the point? Because, like, if I went for a dirt bike ride now, I'd go for an hour and I'd be cooked for a week. But can you do, like, a 30-minute session at the track and then, be okay? Like, would you be sore at all?
No, not really. Yeah. Like, we are – that's sort of, like, our training days, because our races are about that 30-minute mark. So, we'll do two or three of those on a practice day, back-to-back kind of thing. And it's like anything, the practicing is, you get through that, sort of get used to that throughout the year, and it gets easier and easier, and then you get to the race, the intensity is higher and it's a lot harder. And
training
definitely makes it easier.
That's a good point.
Yeah,
that's a very good point. Hey Curdy, do you mind if you could turn the freezer off behind us? Thanks. There's a ticking going that was freaking me out. that's interesting, because when you're, I guess, I've obviously never raced, but the intensity must be that much more, like, because you're going to be on the start line nervous, so that already takes energy out of you. And then if you're like on the start line then going for, is it half an hour, 35 minute motos these days?
Yeah, 25 plus one here.
Yeah,
25 minutes plus one lap. So that can range. If you cross the line at 24 minutes 59, then you have to do another lap.
Yeah,
then you get the last lap.
So
it sort of ranges between that sort of 26 to 30 minute mark normally. Australia is 5 minutes shorter than America and Europe.
Okay. Why do you think that is?
I don't know.
Yeah,
it annoys me.
Yeah, it's random, that, isn't it? That's weird.
Very strange.
Yeah, it's something that I would prefer longer races. Yeah. I know a few of us would, but whether it's that's their TV time, I'm not entirely sure. Okay. So
that's a good point.
If it's for the TV time, and we got to take that, because that's only helping us grow the sport, obviously. So.
Yeah, that's it. That's that's actually one of the reasons why we wanted to even start this podcast, was talking about motorsport, and like in general, I don't think motorsport in Australia gets enough appreciation.
No, definitely not.
Certainly not motocross. And we'll just talk, and Kyle, about Daniel Ricciardo even just before. 10 years ago, he could have walked down the main street of Melbourne and no one really would have known who he is. It's only because of Drive to Survive and these, they elevate these personalities. I'm sure in, Europe and America, it's obviously a lot different at the same time. But having TV coverage is huge, and then having, those types of shows, whatever it is, to help grow the sport. And I think you need to show personality and be allowed to show personality. And
that's the biggest thing, isn't it?
We've spoken to that many people, and that's everything. That's what they always say, is you need to show personality.
Yeah.
you know, and that's good or bad, whatever it is, like there's always needs to be a villain, but like, you know, if you fucked up a race or punted him or something, you should be able to say, oh, I fucked up, you know, like that's just, it is what it is.
Yeah, or you deserved it.
Yeah, or you deserved it, you know.
Well, at the end of the day, that's what people come to watch.
Yeah.
They love that bit of
yeah.
drama, beef between people, the friction. And I mean, they try and create that, I suppose,
yeah.
which is what everyone wants to come and see, really.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. And like, shout out to Gypsy Tales because he does a really good job of it.
He does a very good job.
And, you know, he's really good at getting down to that person when he speaks to. But then also his short stuff that he does, like he puts quotes out there, what guys say, and he's really trying to push the sport in the right direction and give personality to these guys because, you know, most motorsports / just athletes have got a personality that someone could latch onto. You know, he's going to be allowed to do it.
For sure. I think where most people see you is on a race weekend and you're obviously just locked into what you're doing there, whether it's an interview or the TV on the podium or just something like that, you kind of, well, for me anyway, I just feel like I'm drawn into the race. So I kind of, that's what I'm thinking about. I'm not really thinking about what I'm saying in that moment. So it probably does come across like a bit of a robot sometimes, but it's cool when you do see it. When people, there's a couple of people who are just so good at being themselves and it's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Who do you think they are? What's those guys?
Well, I think like Ricardo, for example, he's unreal in front of a camera. There's a couple guys in the motocross world who are pretty good. You've got Vince Fries, who's known to take a few people out.
He came up in our hot takes the other day. We have people call in and like, fucking Vince Friese.
Yeah. And a lot of people get angry about it, but he owns it.
Yeah,
he
that's cool.
Does.
Yeah.
Well, he does, I guess, in the post-race interviews and stuff, and he does get into it. And I've seen it firsthand, like in the pits and stuff. And it just, like I said, it creates that drama between people and everyone talks about it.
Yeah, definitely. That's awesome stuff.
It's so true, though. It's like in sport, I guess there's... not to sound too much like Gypsy Tales, funny enough, but if you see, watch fighting, sometimes the guys that aren't even the best get the money fights because they bring the money in. That's because right. They talk all the shit.
Yeah.
And then,
you know, you could be, you know, maybe running eighth every race. You know, you're mid-pack, whatever. But you're talking heaps of shit like Vince Friese, punting people off, doesn't give a fuck. Like, they're going to get money anyway because sponsors want to jump on board because that bike's getting seen, he's getting seen. So there's so many different ways of looking at it at the same time.
For sure. I mean, Hunter Lawrence, he's another person. Yeah. He's really good at just, I don't know, doing things different. He's really good with speaking, interviews, and same thing.
Amazing.
Always throws that bit of shit talk in there, which is funny.
Yeah, it's good to see. I think Aussies maybe have a little bit of like mongrel in them.
Yeah, that's
bit
it.
Bit of a CUNT.
Fight a little bit harder to get there as well on a world stage.
Bit fucking of a chip on the shoulder.
Yeah, you know, you look at any successful athlete that's Australian, I guess, like they got to go a long way, you know, if it's through Europe or America or both, like there's a long way to do it and it's a hard road. And by the time you get there, of course, you're going to have a bit of a chip on your shoulder.
Oh, for sure. And it also, like, I feel like when the teams and stuff in Europe, you really have to be, well, in America, sorry, but you really have to be a standout in Australia for them to even look in this direction, you know, like the European teams have got Asquillian kids who are fast there and coming up through their programs, and it's only the certain few who get looked at, I suppose, in that outside circle. America's probably similar, like they've got those junior programs that bring them through. Normally it's they'll have a 5-year contract, for example, that brings them into the pros, whereas as an Australian, unless you're there as a kid, or you know, you're the Jet and the Hunter and another kid, Caden Manier from actually where I'm from, Perth, just got a really good opportunity in America, and it's hard to get that from you. So you do understand why when you get there, you've got that
absolutely
to make this happen.
100%. Like Chad Reed, I guess, was an example of that. Everyone thought he was a bit, you know, I guess had a chip on his shoulder. Yeah. It would be a bit feisty, but when you're going through the hard yards, and look, whoever's on, whether it be MotoGP, AMA, MXGP, whatever it is, whoever's there deserves to be there. Like 100%. They're fast enough. It's just how it is. And but to go the hard yards, like we speak about it with Moto2, MotoGP riders, stuff like that. You know, it's normally the Asian Pacific countries like Australia, New Zealand, even Japan, and all the Indonesia, for road racing, and even the Americans, like, they got to go so far just to make it. And then, you know, I guess with motocross, it's different again. Like, you either got the pathway between Europe or AMA.
Ladies and gentlemen, just a quick reminder, we are proudly supported by the great team down at Moto Heaven. They are absolutely unbelievable to deal with. And if I were you guys, I'd definitely head over to their website.
Yes, you never pay full recommended retail price at Moto Heaven, and free delivery for any order over $100.
100%. And they've got the best, most usable website in the whole motorcycle industry. Dare I say the world. They got parts finders. You can chuck in any bike you want. If it's a gold KX250 or an R1, you can find anything you want. Helmets, they got everything. Head to motoheaven.com.au where you will get everything that you need. That's a guarantee.
Do it.
Yeah.
What do you think, in your opinion, is there a better pathway to get over there that you see? Like, is it more beneficial to go to Europe first or straight to the States?
It's hard to say, really. Mm. I mean, Supercross, America is very Supercross driven and based. That you would say that's their primary thing there, which is cool. Obviously, it's more of a show than what motocross is. But I think, like, it seems that people who do that trip to Europe, spend a couple of years there, for example, Chad did it.
Yeah.
Brett Metcalf did it.
Yeah.
Quite a few people, like Jet and Hunter, that's what they did. They went there first. Whether or not they won there, they still did their years
there. Cut their teeth in there, I guess. Slogged it out.
And then that gave them the bridge to America.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it seems like that's the way to do it, but I'm not sure if it's an exact thing. That's maybe it's just preference to everybody how they want to go about it.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's an interesting way of looking at it. Have you done, what's the riding? Obviously, you did designations over there. Have you done many races over in Europe as well?
I did go there right in the middle of COVID.
Okay.
I was meant to go and do a fair few GPs at the end of the year. One of their riders got hurt, so because we'd pretty much shut down here for that year for us. So I was kind of got lucky to get a spot there for the end of the year. And unfortunately, when I got there, I had a few weeks getting used to the bike, getting used to the team and stuff. And I did a race in Germany, like not a MXGP, just a, it's called an ADAC. It's like one of their nationals, I think. But I was in a first turn crash and busted my shoulder. So it sort of put an end to it straight away, unfortunately. And then I got stuck there.
Oh, yeah? How long were you stuck there for?
I ended up being there for a total of 3 months, I think. Oh, shit. By the end. Wasn't bad.
Yeah, obviously, that's right. You're not in Australia where everything was shut down. And
yeah, like, it was still cool. I went and watched all the GPs with the team. They were very accommodating, which was nice, and they understood the situation. Yeah. So that was really cool. I did the designation in 2019 in Assen.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. So did they fill the track? Is that how they did it?
They built a motocross track on the road racing track.
Yeah, that's incredible.
So it's just it's built out of, like, literally, like, full sand.
Yeah.
Which was, it was pretty cool, actually.
But yeah.
It pissed rain the whole weekend, so.
I think I vaguely remember that, funny enough. So was it just muddy sand track?
Yeah, it held on for a long time, but then it really started raining. And obviously, with it being on concrete, it had nowhere to go. So it started filling up the insides, and it was, it was full on. It was cool, though. Like, it was one of those things that, it was my first experience at it, and I really didn't care what the weather was doing.
Yeah.
To be there was
sick. Yeah, it was good enough.
Yeah.
Who were you racing with that year?
Regan Duffy and Dean Ferris.
Yeah. So, he's been around for a long time, Dean Ferris, hasn't he?
Yeah, yeah, you know, he has. Like, he's had a very, 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 very solid career. Yeah. So this is actually his, I think he said he was going to be done for next year. You never really know with him. He gets the fiery edge getting towards the start of the season. So, but no, it was cool. We were like sort of, that. I think they were meant to have Mitch Evans, Jet Hunter and... Maybe it was Dean, but a few of them got hurt.
Yeah.
So me and Regan got the call to fill in, which was...
That's cool. You're going to take it. Bloody oath, you're going to take it. It's so interesting speaking to dirt bike guys, especially, like, you always hear it's just this person got hurt. I got the fill in, or I got hurt. Someone else gets the fill in. Like, it's just such a staple part of that sport. And I can't really comprehend it, but is it just... How do you approach it? Because you know I assume psychology is such a massive thing in motocross and supercross with what you're doing. And how do you approach racing when you know like there's massive consequences?
I don't, it's one of those things trying to think about it.
Yeah, okay, it's fair enough.
In all honesty, you practice during the week, you practice to do things properly and what you can control. Mm. That's what I try and think about. What, you know, you just take it race by race, weekend by weekend, whatever it may be, or even do the start, get through that, then your race is ahead. You know what I mean? It's, I feel like it's one of those things when you start thinking about everything and all the variables, that's when things can start, can go wrong, which obviously, I mean, it can go wrong like that. But I guess you can't really think about it, otherwise you'll be riding around in first gear, really.
Yeah, that's it. It'll stop the performance, wouldn't it?
Exactly.
You slow you down.
Yeah.
That's yeah.
Wild, man. Talk us through, like, coming back, I guess, on the topic, coming back from the shoulder. What's the mental preparation and obviously the physical side to that as well?
Well, yeah, that was a little while ago, but I, it wasn't the end of the world, really, because we were in that weird part of COVID. There was nothing going on here. So when I got back, it was, from memory, I think it was maybe the start of December. So you're kind of going into that Christmas period anyway, no one's doing anything. So it was at that point where I was spewing for the whole opportunity went sort of away, which was what I was more upset about than anything, obviously. My shoulder really didn't take that long to get better. I just sort of chipped the top of it, but it was enough to put me on the side. And like I didn't hit my head. I actually got hit here by somebody like in the neck, which knocked me out for ages. So it was a good head knock. It was just a bunch of stuff. So
yeah, when it rains, it pours sort of thing.
Yeah, a little bit. But I was kind of at the point by the end of it that more just grateful I was there. I was watching the race. If I was here, I wasn't going to be doing anything. So
that's right. At least you got to do something with it.
I always try and be as positive as I can in those situations.
Yeah, definitely.
It's, I don't know, if you can dwell, you can go into a big hole about it.
It's not going to help.
It's not going to get you anywhere.
Yeah,
you
know? That's it. So
that's how I try and look at things. I mean, it's racing. Like we were just saying, there's so much risk to it, whether it's a mechanical, whatever it may be. If you're always going to look at the things that are going wrong, it's never going to help you get forward. So.
No, that's right. That's a good way to look at it.
Yeah, try to anyway.
Well, that's all we ask, eh?
Yeah.
It's, we were talking before about motocross riders, supercross riders, obviously as well, wearing like no armor, super tight jerseys, a little bit of a chest plate, and that's it. It's wild to me.
Yeah, well, I mean, compared to like what the MotoGP guys wear now, but I think Alpine Stars now have like an inflatable?
Yeah, they've got an airbag.
Yeah, they've got an airbag thing that the Dakar guys and rally guys have been using. Yep. So I don't know whether they'll make it to us, but I know that a lot of the enduro guys and rally guys are using that. Mm. But we just run like it's a thin bit of plastic, really.
It's wild.
And it's crazy because I remember when I was younger, like as a junior, you have to wear a body armor, but when you become a senior, it's sort of optional.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, I can't wait to not wear this thing. But then, a few injuries.
Yeah.
I broke my back and stuff, and I was like, oh, I'm never not riding without one.
Yeah,
definitely.
It must be a thing with like maneuverability or something on the bike. Like if you've got a big pressure suit on, it's going to be harder for you to be so, I guess, flexible on the bike.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And like, you know, you always want to feel free and loose and I guess comfortable. So when you're wearing something that's sort of restricting you or you're feeling heavy and whatnot, you're not going to be able to move it.
Yeah.
You know, like it's, you've got to be going fast, obviously, and catch a rut that's the width of a tire. You've got to be able to move and move the bike where you can.
Yeah, that's right. You don't want anything floating around or like, oh, I'm putting elbow guards out of place and stupid shit like that.
Yeah, it's taking like your mental, like you don't want to be, exactly right. You don't want to be thinking about anything like that. But like, you know, copping roost and everything as well would be a whole thing, getting the rocks. Like, obviously, you got the chest guard, but like, I've seen pictures of people copping roost and like, it's all their chest is sprayed.
Open on your hands and shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, after Nations, I in the second motor there, I got hit in the knuckle and I had to get some stitches in that afternoon. And last year, I got a rock in the shoulder here and it, like, oh, maybe it's this side, but it, like, it's put like a bullet hole in my arm.
No way.
So I had to go to the hospital. I wasn't able to ride motor. So it's those little things that you just can't control.
Yeah. And like no one kind of like thinks about or knows about it as well. at the same time seeing that kind of stuff because
no, exactly.
You know, they're getting sprayed at you crazy amounts of speed.
That's it. Like the one in my arm, I remember I got hit with it. I was like, oh, my whole arm sort of went numb for a lap or so. And I came in from the race. I had like a big red patch. I was wearing a white jersey that day. And I remember I like looked in there and it hit the top of my bicep and kind of went through it. So like when I looked in, it was like just pushing a bit of blood out.
Yeah.
It's not so good. But then all people asked me is like, oh, what happened that lap? Why'd you drop back?
Yeah.
No one really knows. You don't see it.
True, of course. That's right. They just think, oh, he's just gotten tired or he's lazy or something like that. Exactly. Little does he know he's been shot by a rock in the arm.
I don't know. So it's just those things like, I don't know. It's nothing major, but it's just.
It's a little things. Yeah. It's a part of it. And I guess if you know, you know. Like I wouldn't know that. If, you know, someone drops down to say six places in a lap,
yeah,
I would have no idea, you know. But that's the thing, like going back to talking about personality, if there maybe is a way where you can get more of that voice out there, you can know more of these things, you know. It doesn't have to be, I don't know how to do it, I don't know, but.
I don't know. I'm so bad with that sort of stuff, social media and all that. Like, don't get me wrong, I do use it, but I very rarely think about it or like how I can be more out there, I think.
Yeah. You just got to be yourself, though.
Yeah, I think so. I think like, that's all you can do.
That's all you can do. Look at Pecco Bagnaia and MotoGP. He seems to be just like a cool, calm, collected guy. And I don't know. It's not like he's really out there flashing Ferraris or whatever. No, like, he's just who he is. And normally that's how you see people get the most fans or whatever, who you are.
Just be who you are. Be consistent with everybody. I think that's all you can do, really.
Exactly. That's a good point. Did you always want to be like a motocross racer? That's only been your goal?
For as long as I can remember, yeah. I started riding when I was really, really young. My dad used to ride a little bit just through the bush and whatnot. And he got me my first bike. Well, then my mum and dad got me my first bike when I was 2.5 or something. Yeah, wow.
Pee-wee 50?
Yeah.
Yep.
Not that I could ride it then, but just to have it and sit on it. And I started racing when I was like 4. So.
Yeah. Wow.
Forever. That's all it's been for me. Yeah. I've never really played any ball sports. I mean, I played probably soccer at school or something, or a little bit of something, but I'm that uncoordinated with ball sports.
I swear, that's all motorsport people are.
You normally find that with the motorsport, more motorsport guys.
Yeah.
They try and catch a ball and it's like,
yeah. 100%. So I feel like it's always been like individual sports that draw to me. Like, it's been motocross forever. I love like, mountain biking, surfing, things like that.
Action sports, I guess. Yeah.
That's all I've wanted to do.
That's awesome, man. What was it like loading up for the first race? Do you remember?
Oh, I can't even remember. It was a while ago, but I do remember one of my first ever races. I remember like doing the race and whatever. I was so far back and last. I had no idea where to go after the finish line. And I ended up riding in the wrong direction up the start straight, and like back then, like a local race in South Africa where I was from, I don't think it ran as well as what it would do here. And I remember them dropping the gates, and there was like people coming at me, sort of thing. And I was just stopped right in the middle of the track, crying, waiting for someone to come and get me. That's probably the first memory I have.
That's awesome. There's always tears, isn't there? Yeah, there's always tears.
There always is.
That's funny. So what were you racing then?
Oh, just on a Pee-wee? Yeah, they had a couple of different classes back then as like for juniors and stuff.
Yeah,
so,
nice.
Yeah, I rode a Pee-wee that year.
Nice. Moving up. And then is it back then, is it just like 65, 50s, 65s, 85s?
Yeah, so when I was born in South Africa and raced there for a little while until I was 6, so that was all just Pee-wees and maybe the smaller KTMs.
Yeah.
I think it's called an adventure.
Okay.
Mini adventure. And then we moved to England and that's when I got onto like the bigger 50, the KTM one.
Fuck, you've been everywhere.
Yeah.
What is for your old man's work or something like that?
Just my mum and dad. We were all from South Africa. They were born there as well. And they had, well, I'm sure everyone said South Africa is not the best place on earth at the moment. So they've had a fair few gnarly things happen there.
Yeah, some crazy stories. A lot of our family friends are from South Africa and like they've got stories where they're in gated communities And they've like found people, like they've had to shoot people. We literally shoot people. Like they'll have dogs. They poison the dogs to then jump in and rob you.
It's gnarly. So they had some stuff happen to them and whatnot. And the next best place for us to move was England.
Yeah.
We had some of our other family live there. So we spent about 4 years or so there. I race the 50s there and 65s for a little while. And we actually got all of our bikes got stolen when we were living there.
Jeez, so unlucky, man.
I know. And then I was very lucky they got me another one. And literally nearly to the exact date, the following year, they got stolen again.
Jeez.
And it was at that point, I think we were moving to Australia by then. They were so over England. Yeah. You know, like South Africa is like a warm, beachy place. England's cold.
Definitely not
average.
That, yeah.
So that was like that 6 month period where I played a little bit of ball sports and whatnot and had no idea what I was doing. and then we moved to Perth.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. What's jumping a bit, but like, riding is when you do tracks in, just say, Perth compared to Melbourne or Sydney, is it just completely different?
A little bit. West Australia's got that sort of everything sand reputation, which, don't get me wrong, a lot of it is. So growing up in Wanneroo, near, like, I don't know if you guys know Barbagallo and all that, it's one of the racing tracks.
I know that one, yeah.
So the motocross tracks are right next to that.
Yeah.
And it is, it's just full sand. So I did rode there pretty much most of my junior life because we live so close to it. We did have a few hard pack tracks, but it's kind of like a more of a pea gravelly sort of hard pack. Whereas over here seems to be obviously less sand, more clay based tracks. So I think that's the difference really.
Is it more of an advantage, do you reckon, growing up with sandy tracks?
Don't know. I think a lot of people do say that. You get a bit of a skill riding the sand a lot. I think some people transition from riding the sand onto hard pack better than what they do the other way around.
Yeah.
But just Perth's so far away from everything over here. So
it's another country, man. Yeah. It's legit another country.
It almost is. Especially when you get a drive over to start it all off.
Yeah.
I guess it's better to be over here because everything's closer. There's more happening. But Perth's definitely unique in its own way. It was cool to grow up there, ride where we did.
Yeah.
You know, go to the track after school every day till dark. You can't really do that over here. There.
Exactly right. Melbourne's so like just Melbourne or Sydney or whatever, so closed off. Like
Yeah.
And to go to a track, it's normally pretty far from where you're normally living. Where if you got land or whatever in Perth, it would make it so much easier.
Well, Perth has like within an hour of the actual center of the city, probably has a good near on 10 tracks,
we wouldn't even have that.
Which are public tracks. Yeah. Like if you join the club, you get a key, you can go ride wherever you want.
Really?
Yeah. So that's why crazy. It was really cool over there. You didn't have to have your own personal track or bit of property. You could live in the suburbs and ride every day if you wanted to.
Yeah,
just
right.
Join up with the club.
Shit, that's all right. That's really cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah, wouldn't get that here.
Nah.
No way.
When I first moved to Sydney from Perth, I was like, you could ride at Appen twice a week if they were open, and Mount Kembla on a Thursday, I think. So
yeah,
it was a big shift.
Yeah, it's crazy. And like, you know, you need, especially if you're younger as well, like you need repetition. Like
for sure.
If you're gonna be riding all the time if you want to make it to where like yourself are.
Yeah, well, I guess that's it. Which is why, like, well, not why, but I think it'd be so hard with them, like the road racing guys.
Yeah.
They get to practice like never, it seems.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Especially in Australia, like we've spoken to like a lot of Aussie superbike guys and guys overseas, and in Australia, I guess the one thing that's going for them now is they got the Evales, so they're doing like the little Moto Tuesdays on those mini bikes. I don't know if you've seen them.
Yeah.
But like a track day in Australia is hard to come by.
Oh yeah.
You know, it's expensive.
Couple days a week,
depending on. On weather, especially if you're in Melbourne, like weather's the killer.
Yeah.
And then they might even can it because of the weather. Where like in Europe, they either have their own track. So like Joel Kelso races Moto 3 was saying he's in a group chat with all these guys. They all put money into it, so they hire the track out, then they can just go out there all day or whenever they want, and they can go to a motocross track or a road racing track.
Yeah, like, whatever it may be.
It's so much easier for them. where, yeah, you know, if you're racing Aussie Superbikes or just trying to even race, whether it be Vic titles or whatever, just getting track time so hard and so expensive.
Well, that's the thing. Like, a set of tyres for them is through the roof, isn't it?
Crazy. It's like, what's a set of tyres these days?
Oh, for the average punter, probably, yeah, $600-$700 for a set of slicks.
Really, that much?
And if you're chewing through them, that's obviously per session, per day, I should say.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Plus fitting.
Yeah.
Balance.
Everything.
Everything.
You'd be running those things down to the rim.
Oh, no, 100%. You wouldn't. You
know, rallies are through the roof, man. And that seems to be what everyone wants to run. No one tends to run much else. Michelin gets a bit of a crack, but that's about it.
I guess it's one of those things, like, if you're going to buy them, you might as well buy the one that's going to give you the best.
Well, exactly right. Especially if you're chasing times or anything like that. But yeah, it's. I mean, we're in the industry and it's crazy. Like, yeah, we see it firsthand of how expensive it can get. But even dirt's the same when you start to think of it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, I mean, when you're practicing a lot, you go through a lot of stuff.
How long does a set of tyres last? Like, would you change a set of tyres after each session?
Not during the week, no. No. Like, sometimes at races, yes. But it depends where you're riding. Mm. Like, when I was over in America before Nations training, I used one tyre for 6 weeks.
No,
like,
shit.
It was just soft. The dirt was soft. Wow. It didn't do anything to them. But then some days you ride a track that's like this, just concrete pretty much, and like one session and it's smoked, missing knobs left, right and center, especially with the factory tyres. They're a bit softer, and on a hard pack track, they just get,
That's crazy.
But it's not $600 a tyre either.
Well,
nah, what's a set? Like $300 for the average punter or something
probably,
like that?
Probably, yeah. 280 maybe, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it depends what you run. You can get up to like 160 for a rear is probably the most you'll spend. Yeah. 180 maybe.
What brand were you running this year?
Dunlop.
Dunlops, yeah. They're a good one, aren't they?
Yeah.
I'll run Dunlops on the front.
There you go. You know what, though? Like, it's so specific tyres. People will swear by Michelin or Dunlop or Pirelli, and that's, you will never convince them, you know?
I don't
know if it's the same with dirt, but.
Oh, for sure. Like, it's all preference.
Yeah.
What works the best, what you get the best feel with. And I mean, I don't know if it's probably down to the same degree as what road racing would be. But Pirelli's and Dunlop seems to be like the pinnacle of motocross, in my opinion, I guess. And it's just one of those things, you just want one or the other, really.
Yeah, isn't that funny how it works?
I've never sold a set of Pirelli dirt tires, to be honest.
Really?
Yeah, a lot of people.
Well, in Europe, 95% of tyres there are Pirelli. All the teams use Pirelli.
Yeah, right.
Bridgestone gets a good run here.
Yeah, okay.
From storefront anyway.
Mm.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and then like in America, everyone uses Dunlop. Nobody uses Pirelli.
Isn't that funny?
It's strange, yeah.
What's to go, like, talking about motocross bikes and how expensive they can get? Like, it's crazy. You know, you can get wrapped at foot pegs. It's like $500 for foot pegs. It's ludicrous money, like, just for a fucking foot peg. But obviously it makes a difference.
Yeah.
But it's wild. You see, there's a difference between, just say, like, an Aussie Nationals bike to an AMA bike to an MXGP bike. The MXGP bikes had more work done to them.
Yeah, they do, because MXGP, they don't really have a rule where you have to,
like, abide by.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, obviously, with engine size and whatnot, you do. So
they put a Jigs 1000 motor in there.
But, like, as for frames, parts, things like that, whatever they can do, they can do.
Oh, shit.
Which I think, Europe has got a really, really, like, factory level with Japan, Austria, like, the brand manufacturers.
Yeah.
So they just, they got some sick stuff on their bikes, and what they can get the data from and whatnot is unbelievable. Whereas,
that's interesting.
Yeah. America has a few more rules. Their frame's not allowed to be, like, that has to fit into a specific jig.
Yeah.
So everything has to be the same. Like, don't get me wrong, they can add things and do small bits and pieces to make it work better for them. But yeah, they've got a few more rules there.
Yeah.
And obviously, America and Europe both have got way bigger budgets than Australia do.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Like, sorry for the background noise, everyone. That's something coming through. It's standard Benzina. When they've got a Ferrari or something coming through, then.
There's some cool cars here.
Bloody oath, man.
Yeah.
We were talking about that Subaru before, how it's worth like 400 grand. And
nuts, huh? 22B. It's a good bit of kit, that.
You're just saying numbers and letters now.
No, blue Subaru.
Yeah. Colin McRae. Colin McRae.
Yeah.
I think we're good.
Yeah.
What were we talking about?
Yeah, well, obviously, America and Europe got much bigger budgets than Australia.
Oh, 100% isn't anything.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, over here, don't get me wrong, my team, for example, the guy who runs it, Yariv Konski, he speaks a lot with the American guys, some of the Europe guys, and gets all the information and stuff. But I think, like, those teams over there, they still have to, like, buy the parts and stuff from HRC.
Yeah.
But yeah, they just have enormous budgets. Yeah, they just churn through it, you know, and we don't. Australia's a lot smaller. No. So
yeah, exactly.
We get some of it, not all of it.
Yeah.
But I think, like, with what we have here, it adapts to our tracks really well.
Yeah.
We've always been doing it here for a long time. So everyone kind of knows
how to make it work.
Make it work for our situation.
Yeah, sweet.
So, like, just say you do Des Nations. And obviously it went over.
Yep.
Are the Aussies and Americans and Kiwis and whoever else, are they going up against the Europeans, like their bikes versus Works bikes? Or is there a...
Yeah. Yeah, no, okay. It is, yeah.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's the American guys ship their bikes there.
Yeah.
The Euros have their bikes.
Yep.
The only thing that you have to run FIM fuel, which is...
Okay.
America, there's... You can run the think it's 100 and however many octane you can have there, but the FIM's only 100, same as Australia. You can only use 100 octane. So that's the only thing really that changes for that race for the Americans. Everyone else is whatever you got.
That's mad.
That's pretty insane. There'd be a huge difference between all those bikes.
Yeah, well, like I said, our stuff here that suits Australia, the American bikes suit America.
Yeah.
Europe bikes suit the European tracks. Yeah. So I think, like, it can be hard sometimes. Like, Jet and Hunter, obviously taking their stuff there. I was talking about it last year with them. They said, like, their bikes were unreal in America, but then they get to, Ernane. Don't get me wrong, they still both rode sick.
Mm. Yeah.
Jet still won. But he's like, yeah, it could have been a little bit comfier, you know? And I'd imagine it'll be the same when the Euro guys send their bikes to America if they do. It's just all different.
Yeah, and it'd be a lot of work for the teams to dial it in too.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, those teams are massive. And the American guys doing, 17 Supercrosses, 11 motocrosses, 3 SMX races.
Yeah,
it's
starts
nuts.
In January.
It doesn't seem like it hardly stops, does it? Like, they're just racing all year round.
Just flat out, week in, week out.
Yeah.
And then... to ship some stuff to Europe or wherever it may be to do another race and dial it in. And
it's crazy. It's come to Australia, they do some more stuff. Like, it's nuts.
It's nuts.
You know, it's a long schedule. There's not many sports like that. Like, tennis is a sport where it doesn't have an off season, you know.
True.
It does never seems like there's an off season. And it seems the same with, you know, motocross and supercross. Like, it is, there's always something going on.
Well, I think for, like, America, it's a bit like that. They do a lot. Europe's 20 MXGP races, which is still a lot when you're traveling the world, and then whatever local races that they have, but they do get an off season. The Euro guys, the American guys, off season is very, very short, but they still manage to get it in there and reset somehow.
Somehow, and especially if you're injured, like if you're injured, then your off season is probably cooked anyway.
Yeah, or whether it's your season.
Yeah,
like, you know, if someone gets hurt during Supercross, it could potentially ruin both their championships because they only have one weekend off in between Supercross and Motocross.
That's so crazy.
Yeah.
That's a hard sport. Like, it's a hard, hard, hard sport. But
yeah, it's gnarly. It's one of those things though, until you know, so you just roll with it.
Yeah. How was your rides over in the States? Redbud and was it Southwick, was it?
Yeah, Southwick. It was cool.
I saw your results. Really impressive.
Yeah, no, it was good. Like I said, I'd like to love to go back in now that I sort of know what to expect with it. I kind of just rolled up there really not knowing what to expect or even how their schedule works.
Yeah.
Like, down to the small things, you're not allowed to walk the track there prior to the race. It's like, it's fine, but there's parts of the track you haven't seen, so you don't really know what it is. And they have, there's no free practice there.
Okay.
So it just goes straight into like a one roll lap, the next lap qualifying starts.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, when you haven't seen the track, you really, like, got to be on to
it. You got to be on straight away.
Yeah, and like things like that makes it a little harder, especially with somewhere like Southwick where it's sandy. So the track, really, you have to do your good lap on the first lap, because in the next lap, the track's blown to bits.
Yeah.
That's why sometimes at that race, you see like people from the B group and the 250 class qualify the fastest because they're first on track that day.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's just those small things and their intensity that they have, the heat. Like it's just, well, it's middle of Melbourne in winter there and you're rolling smack bang in the middle of their summer.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it was those things that I sort of, I knew it would be like that, but didn't really think about it at the time. But yeah, like it was definitely cool. It was such an experience.
100%.
See those tracks on TV, watched them your whole life, and you get to go and ride them.
Extra That'd 5 minutes awesome. Of racing as well. It's an extra five minutes.
Yep. Yep.
Got to put that into account.
Yeah, More seat time. More seat time. Tongue was hanging out when it was warm.
Nah, that's cool. And like, you know, I'm sure I've obviously never been, but the AMA event must be just huge.
Yeah,
like especially Red Bar. I think Red Bar is like their biggest one.
Yeah, well, that was the first time they reckon they sold out the camping. Like, there's two huge paddocks down the bottom. The track's up on a hill, and down the bottom's where everyone camps, sort of things. And it was like thousands of campers down there, and it was
that's awesome.
It was so cool. Like,
is it on 4th of July? Is it for them?
That's
that's
why.
Yeah,
huge.
People are literally there from Wednesday to Wednesday to spend the week. Get hammered all week, watch racing, yell, scream, carry on.
Go America.
it was such a cool event. And obviously the Rocco's Leaps there.
Yeah.
That was one of the only things that I was panicking about from the moment I knew I was racing that.
Yeah, that what's that like? Because that looks insane. Like all the footage of that is incredible.
It's huge.
Yeah.
I got to do press day at that one and I was like, oh, I have to jump this on press day on Friday so I can at least know that I've got it in the bag for qualifying when it starts.
Yeah.
And it was raining that day. So I was like, oh, surely no one's jumping this. Like it's massive. And I was sort of bummed because I wanted to do it before the race.
Yeah.
And you jumped over this jump before it, go down the hill, turn left, and then there's the leap.
Yeah.
And I jumped that jump before and I looked over at it and I saw Chase Sexton like just leaning back flat out and jumped it. I was like, oh no, like, I need to do this now. And it was literally that lap. I was like, oh, it's now or never sort of thing. Yeah. And committed to it, and it was like I haven't had the feeling in a long time where like I was going up the up ramp because it's blind, you're going up here, you can't see where the down ramp is, and like I got to the top and my heart just like sunk because you're still going uphill, you're losing a lot of speed.
Yeah,
it's like four cases, it's not gonna be good.
Yeah.
But yeah, once I jumped it, it was easy. It was just flat out.
Yeah. Jesus, it's sketchy. And like if you're going, you know, this is fucking sketchy, then it's sketchy.
Yeah, well, like, it's one of those things. Like, once you've jumped it a couple of times, you sort of know how fast to hit it, and it's not so bad.
Yeah.
But definitely the first few times, I was like, oh.
Yeah.
This is scary.
Man, that's insane. I can't do that.
Yeah, no, I can barely keep my feet on the pegs going over a little jump.
Yeah, true.
Let alone launching off something like that.
Yeah, that's true. Wild.
Sometimes it's just one of those things. Like some of the jumps where you have to time them with the throttle is harder. Like a supercross track, for example, where you've really got to be like, you can't go long or you can't go short because you're in the middle of a rhythm. That's hard.
Yeah. How do you figure that out?
Like, I don't know. Some people have asked that, but it's like one of those things. If you can see the down ramp, you kind of know how fast to go.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, it goes wrong sometimes. But the ones that are blind is where it's hard. Where you can't see the down ramp the first time and you're like, really don't know how hard to hit this, but I don't know if it's muscle memory or just spending that much time riding, jumping things. You just kind of know.
Yeah.
Guess. Yeah. Educated guess sometimes.
I guess that's the best thing you can do sometimes.
Yeah, guess. Land in the corner, land on the back of the down ramp. Don't know.
Just survive.
Survive.
It's, I remember the first time we went to a supercross event and like you think it's big and then you go there and you see how big those jumps are. Like, it's insane. And then like how the guys, you know, handle the whoops.
Yeah.
You know, and then learning that. I remember watching a really interesting doco with Cincirillo when he was younger and he was getting taught how to ride the whoops and like slowly building up to it on, you know, almost like rolling over it. And I think they weren't as harsh as well when he did it. And then like really having to commit onto that must be scary at the same time as well. And having to think about that and then riding the whoops straight into a berm and then hitting another something jump. Else. You know?
Yeah,
it doesn't there's no real rest on a supercross track.
No, there isn't. And supercross is obviously so intense, your heart rate's so high. And like I always say, it's one thing to ride a supercross track, it's not so bad, but then to race one and be fast around one, and when there's four people next to you and people are going everywhere, that's when it can, it gets a lot harder. And once the track starts breaking down a lot and it gets rough and ruddy, and sometimes you hit the ply underneath it, which is super slippery. It's just a mixture of everything, really.
Yeah, it definitely is. And like, I don't know. I don't know how guys do it. It's a tough sport that those guys do, and obviously yourself do. Like, you watch, you know, you see Gypsy Tales and those guys talking to like Jet or Hunter or, you know, Chase Sexton. Like the core strength in those guys, I think I've heard Chase is quite real, super super strong.
Yeah.
And it must be something that's really coming into the sport more and more, like just core strength.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it seems to be that way now, I would say. Like I said, everyone trains differently, whatever suits them. Like, you have Chase, who's like quite a solid dude, you know? Yeah. And then you have someone like Prado from Europe, who's smallish, I would say, skinny, lightweight, like a Tom Bial. They make it work, you know? And then you got like Alden Baker's program. He's, well, from what I've heard, obviously, is just a lot of cycling. So like, everyone's pretty small, skinny. Lots of volume. And then, like Chase, Tomac, those dudes are like solid.
Yeah, jacked.
Yeah.
It's cycling such a thing though. Like, you know, in so much motorsport, especially motorcycle racing, like cycling's like the main thing. You know, it obviously builds the cardio up, but, you know. It's
low impact as well, maybe.
Yeah, low impact, easy load.
Yeah.
You know, you can do, your legs get tired and your ass gets sore, but like. Yeah. You generally wake up the next day feeling fine, but you know, you go run for 2 hours or whatever it may be, and you normally are pull up a bit stiff the next day. And if you've got to go ride that next day, you want to be relatively fresh.
Bloody oath you do. Yeah, you don't want something, you know,
not being able to walk.
Yeah, that's right, and clouding your mind at the same time. Nah, it's that's cool. Well, hopefully next year, I keep thinking it's almost 2025.
I know.
It's weird, isn't it?
It's come around too fast.
You get some more chances to go over to the States as well. But like, reigning MX1 champ at the same time, that was awesome to see. You know, how did that all come to fruition? And, you know, riding the circuit and the Aussie tracks must be, you know, such a challenge in itself, you know.
Yeah. Like, I think, well, next year, hopefully, I get to do some more nationals, so long as our calendars align. The team that I ride for here, Yariv, has got another team in America as well that are doing the motocross next year. So hopefully we can make that work. That's kind of what I've been pushing for, and just reminding him every day. Trying to, but this year was awesome. I feel like it was one of those years in my career where I'll never forget.
Yeah.
You know, I got to do so many things for the first time. Yeah. Raced so many people all over the world, obviously racing here and managing to get the win. Yeah. It was one of those years where it just felt like lots of things were clicking and it was working. I don't know. Everyone's asked me, it's hard to put into words this year. So
a bit of relief maybe as well.
Yeah, I think so. Like, it's one of those things, and it definitely was going really well. The last round on the Saturday, I crashed and busted my hand up, and it gave me like a, I can't remember. It's carpal tunnel, really.
Yeah. Okay.
But it's not like built up over time. It just was like, bang, it's there. So like, that happened on the Saturday, and our last round was Sunday. And I was like, oh, this is going to be a challenge. Cause every time I could get like two laps and then my hand would go numb.
Yeah.
Like that sort of tingly, numb feeling. I couldn't really feel anything, and managed to get through by the skin of my teeth. Which what could have been, I would never say a cruisy weekend, but definitely a weekend that I didn't have to go there and try and win.
Yeah, that's right.
But then ended up being the hardest weekend of the year for me. So one of those things, once it was done, I was over the moon.
Yeah.
So happy. And it was a weird feeling. Like, I've thought about it for forever, what it would feel like to win and like cross the line and whatever and just be stoked. And I was all of that. But then Nations was right around the corner. So it was like it just switched, you know.
Yeah.
My partner, Jaden, she said to me, like, make sure you take this all in. And I was like, yeah, I will. But it was like literally next morning. Next
straight onto it.
Straight onto it.
Yeah.
how do I fix my hand? How do we move forward? And then that was it, because it was just like, you have those like big events straight in a row. It's, you know, you just got to try and...
Yeah, you got to try and keep the focus.
Try and keep the focus forward. Enjoy it afterwards when the year ends, I guess.
That's it, eh?
Yeah.
How far after was Des Nations?
It was 5 or 6 weeks,
yeah,
which would have been totally fine. I was meant to go to America, and I was actually going to go race Ironman on the 250 because Shimoda got hurt.
Yeah.
So they said, oh, you might as well come early, and doesn't matter where you come sort of thing, just ride the bike, see what you think of it, enjoy the weekend. Didn't happen, unfortunately, so I was spewing about that. But, yeah, I ended up flying there straight away and just trying to work on my hand a little bit and get it better, which it was, like, good and bad because I didn't get to ride for the first few weeks while I was there. I tried, and same thing, I get, like, 2 laps in.
It must have been really cooked, yeah.
Yeah, I was, like, I was more so freaking out than anything.
Yeah,
like, what's actually wrong, you know? Yeah. Like, it's... one thing, like, you break a bone, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things where it's, like, a bit nervy and,
yep,
like, why is my hand going numb sort of thing. That was freaky. But I actually ended up, I spoke to a surgeon here, Stephen Andrews from Brisbane, and he was like, I think the only thing it can be is carpal tunnel. So you might have to go and get a cortisone in your carpal tunnel. And obviously in Australia, that's not the easiest thing to do, to go through the correct medical way to go and get a cortisone. Right.
You can't just find a dude on the side of the street and go, jab me up.
But America's totally different. I spoke to Dean Wilson, who's one of my good friends over there, and he's had quite a few in his knee over the years. And I said, like, do you know anywhere I can get one, like around sort of that Florida area? And he was like, yeah, I'll have a doctor in Orlando. I'll talk to him. So like half an hour later, he rang me. He's like, yep, here's his number. He'll see ya. I called him and he was like, yeah, so your surgeon reckons you need a cortisone in your carpal tunnel? I was like, yeah, it's give me dramas. Sweet, no dramas. Come here on Friday, $200.
No shit.
Cortisone. I was like, shit, man.
That's the Americans for you, seriously.
Yeah, and like...
that's awesome.
Obviously, like, it's within the boundaries of ASADA and all that. And it was fine, but... it was crazy how it works over there. Like the medical system and just how relaxed they are compared to here was obviously our medical system's unbelievable here.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is a good thing.
Yeah.
But I couldn't believe it. I remember sitting there with my mechanic and we were like, I can't believe we're doing this. Just in this hospital so in Orlando.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. Like in Australia, you have to like go and get
a referral to a surgeon. You go see the surgeon after 3 months and then
hopefully
there's a cortisone booking for the next month. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah, it was just so handy. Steve was unreal. Like, the surgeon from here helped me a ton over the phone, which was good. And literally once I got that one, it's like one of those things. The next day it was better. By the end of the week,
it was better again. Yeah.
2 weeks later, I was like,
I'm good.
It just got better and better and better each week, which was really cool. And from then I started riding, which was good, and it was about 4 million degrees and super humid, so definitely made it hard.
Because Florida and would you say California are the two big dirt bike states?
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of talent that's come out of both of them, and riding in Florida in that heat must be good for training, but bloody hard work.
I don't know how they do it. Like, obviously, their motocross season over there is through summer.
Yeah.
And they, like, race on the weekend, hot, get home, practice during the week, cooking.
Yeah.
Like, when we were there, it was like you go do your moto outside, get back into the shed as fast as you can and sit under the aircon, you know? But it's what they do, and I don't know. It just seems to be the place to be over there at the moment. Everyone's got their facilities there. And
yeah, right.
I guess it's like Melbourne, it's good for it. Like, obviously we're not humid, but we get that regular rain here normally.
Yeah.
It's good for riding.
True. Yeah, true. Because it's so tropical there, I guess it would be like that.
Here's not real tropical, but it
definitely
rains.
Not. It's like dry as and doesn't rain forever and then it'll just drizzle for 6 months.
Yeah.
It's bad.
It's terrible.
It's bad. So going over to Des Nations, we obviously all watched that. That would have been an experience in itself. Madeley Basin.
Yeah.
What's the track like?
It was really cool.
Yeah.
Unreal for spectators. Like, it's in a big valley.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Like, it was so cool. The track was nasty. Like,
it looked destroyed.
Yeah. They had a lot of rain there and not obvious. Well, they rained a little bit on the weekend, but prior to that, they had heaps and they went out there with the diggers and literally just turned the whole track over. and it made it next level deep. Like all the jumps, what was really hard about it, like we ride ruddy tracks all the time, but something that I thought was pretty difficult is in those gullies on the down ramps, because it was so soft, like you would take off in a rut, but you'd have to land in like a rut and then follow that one all the way to the turn. And normally it's not so bad, but like I was talking to you about blind jumps where you can't see the down ramps, a few of those jumps are like that. And it's one of those things that if you case it and then bounce into the bottom of the gully, you're going to crash.
Yeah.
If you go too long, land in the bottom of the gully, you're going to crash. You're just going to stop. So it was hard, you know, and like you watch those guys like a Jet or the Euro guys, guys at Prado, some of the races that I got to watch, like, these jumps are small and everyone's just jumping them so awkwardly and slow and jumping high. So you can just get the most time to see those places where you got to land.
Yeah.
It was full on.
Man.
It was hard.
100%. And like, Des Nations is such a, I love it because it's so cool seeing all the talent from around the world representing their country in one spot. And like, you know, it's even cool. We're talking before, like, works bikes versus, you know, the Americans and the Aussies and everything like that. It's just so, it's so different. It's so cool to see people rep for their country and obviously amazing result. And like, you know, what you did, I think you're up at seventh in the first moto, sixth, seventh.
Yeah, I was running around. Floating around there. I got passed by a few of the 450 guys in the end and I ended up 11th, but I was pretty happy. I was a second 250.
Man, it's amazing.
The guy who won the world championship this year was in front of me. So it was a pretty solid effort,
That's
I thought.
Very solid.
Good start helped. But I had a really good bike. I was riding one of the American Honda's bikes, which was unreal. I got to practice on it a bit before we left as well. And I couldn't believe how good the thing was, really. So that definitely made life easier. I got some good starts when I was there, which was helpful.
Yeah.
You know, if you're in the thick of it from the start, it's definitely going to be harder. But
oh, God, it must just make your life that much harder for the next 35 minutes, whatever it is.
Yeah, sometimes, especially the second race. Like, I got a really good start and I was in a good position. I must have been floating around, like, sort of same, sixth, seventh. And I got hit by a rock in the goggles and it busted my film.
Right.
I was running roll-offs at that one. And it was just that drizzly rain that was sort of...
standard palms.
Just terrible for goggles. And I was like, oh, I could probably manage this. I was using my thumb to swipe it and whatever for a while. And then it got to a point where I was like, oh, it's not real good anymore. So I had to pull in and change goggles quickly.
Yeah, no shit.
And I was like, I had a bit of a gap back. So I was only going to lose a couple of positions. And I did. I swapped back, got back out there. I was behind like Cooper Webb and a couple other guys. And as soon as I put the next set of goggles on, because my face was wet from throwing them off and it was cold and whatever, my goggles fogged up straight away. And then it was just like, I was trying to manage it, trying to ride with them. I ended up tossing them. It was like raining a little bit and it just went downhill real quickly from there.
And if you hit water at speed, like rain, it's like pins going into your face.
So, but luckily their format, you're allowed to drop one motor.
Yeah.
And, you know, Jet and Hunter, they're pretty solid. I was convinced they were going to have a couple good races.
They're good teammates to have for your country, that's
exactly,
for sure.
Exactly. So I did say to them, if I have a good first race, the rest is on you too.
That's awesome.
But I would have loved to have had another good solid motor. I think it would have been pretty cool because it would have put me, you know, second to 50, maybe first, depending on where Kai came. But it's one of those things. It's a team event, so it didn't, you know, it's not individual. It's the one thing we do as a team. And
that's what's really so cool about it. You know, it's a team event.
It was sick, pitting with Jet and Hunter that weekend was pretty wild. It was like being in a big fishbowl.
Yeah.
It was just a gajillion people there just looking in all the time, screaming and carrying on. And it was sick. Like, I was embracing it. I could imagine for them it would be a bit painful. They get it every single weekend. Yeah. But to be like a part of it was cool. And
100%.
There was so many Aussies there that weekend, which was mad, you know, like, especially at the end when the podium was on and all the Aussie flags, you could see just everyone running across the track.
It was amazing.
Coming to the podium. It was, it was pretty special.
It was so cool to see. It's so good to see, you know, the Aussies get up there and do it. And like, you were literally part of history doing it, which is insane. You know, because the Americans had the stronghold for a long time. The French had the stronghold, you know, the most recent, like they were just dominant.
Yeah, they have been for years.
You know, years and years, exactly. So it was so good to see and, you know, being a part of that team. And who would have thought, like, you know, three Aussie kids are like the rock stars of MXGP with, you know, yourself and the two Lawrence brothers, which is another crazy story, like two brothers.
I know.
You know, doing such amazing things overseas is it's another level. I was so proud watching it. Like, you know, I've watched motocross my whole life, and when I was growing up, the Americans dominated. Like Ricky Carmichael would just blow everyone out of the water, or James Stewart, or Villopoto, if you remember, on a 250, I think at Redbud, destroyed everyone on a 250. Like, you think, how are you going to supposed to compete with that? You know,
it's insane.
It was amazing to see. Did you have a good party afterwards?
Well. No, I didn't.
You flew home.
No, I didn't fly home. I was actually staying in England for a few days afterwards to see some family and stuff there. Like, I haven't been back since we lived there. So we had a trip planned, but I don't know what happened to me. I got the gnarliest, like, stomach cramp after the race.
Yeah, right.
I was pretty much on all fours, like, in the truck, cold sweat. The whole nine yards. I don't know what happened to me. We did, like, the press conference thing, and I was sort of sitting there, like, starting to feel like I was going to throw up a little bit. Maybe I was like getting the cold sweat sort of thing. Jeez. And then I don't know what, like, I just, my stomach just tied itself in a knot, and I was like, yeah, literally lying down like in the fetal position. It hung out like till nearly Wednesday when I flew home. I was a bit uneasy, you know? I still don't know what it was, what it was from.
Maybe you just put all your body's energy and effort into those two races.
Maybe it was that. Maybe it was just everything, the whole thing just caught up to me. And,
possibly.
So, I didn't do anything after, really, went to bed. Like, don't get me wrong, it was still cool. We had dinner with everyone and, like, all that stuff. But, no massive after party.
It's cool, like, you know, your face and Hunter and Jet were just everywhere, like, every website, lifting up the trophy. Like, it's must have been cool to see.
It was. It was so cool. And, like, especially in that moment. I remember saying to them, I was like, someone else go in the middle. I don't want to be there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's
like,
because you were in the middle.
They were like, nah, you get in the middle. So, it's still like, it's weird to see, which it's one of those things. It feels like it was ages ago now, but it really wasn't. And like, it's probably like, you know, best career highlight for me ever.
For sure.
Yeah.
Has to be.
Well, just like, I guess this year has been, there's been so much happen. It feels like we're saying, it's nearly Christmas now. Like, the year has just absolutely flown by.
What a year you've had, though. Like, you've had, you know, won titles, raced over in the States, done Redbird, and won Des Nations. Like, you know, can't get many better than that.
That's a good resume for 24, isn't it?
Yeah. One of my, closest friends from over here came with to mechanic for me in America.
Yeah.
Because my mechanic here with the race team had a lot to do here, so he couldn't come for that big six-week block. So Craig came with me, and we were literally joking about it. Like, imagine we win this thing. And when we did, we're sitting there talking. I was like, I think it could be done now. Yeah. I'm just going to leave it at this note.
Bloody oath.
Jokingly, obviously, but it was unbelievable. And having that many people there from Australia, so many actually people from Perth came that I knew, which was...
That's cool.
Yeah, it was really, really cool.
Nah, that's so cool to see, like... You know, seeing the Aussies do well, and like, you know, I had a sneaky suspicion, like, Aussies at least are going to podium. You know, there's a very, very, it's probably our best team that's ever lined up for Des Nations, and to just then do it, and you know, it's good to beat the French, it's good to beat the Americans. I gotta admit, it's good.
Jet actually said that when we're on the podium. He's like, man, it's good to hear the Australian, because obviously he's done it a few times, and they've just heard the other countries, and Yeah, it was cool. It was, the Aussie flags is probably the highlight for me. Yeah. Just everybody down there was sick.
Yeah, it must be like just a pinch yourself moment on the podium, trying to sink it all in, thinking like, you know, it's history as well. And for the biggest motocross event, really, for the year.
Like, you look, I remember standing there looking left, I think it was, or yeah, I think left was Jeffrey Herlings, and right was Tomac, and Jet and Hunter, you know, next to me. And I'm like...
Crazy.
Yeah, some
big names.
This is pretty cool.
Big names. It's and you know, some of those, I think some of the Europeans, Prado is looking to go over to do a supercross.
Yep, he's there now.
Yeah.
So he's riding for Cowie next year doing supercross. So
that's interesting.
A lot of them seem to be trying to make the move over there.
Is it from, is it more, because MXGP, there has to be some serious money in that sport. But is the supercross bigger again, do you reckon?
Yeah. I think America's definitely got the most amount of money that they can make there.
Yeah.
Americans do everything massive.
Don't they?
Yeah. You know what I mean?
Didn't they, do they still do that? I'm not too sure. But I remember when they did those Triple Crown races and then they would win like a million. That Monster Energy.
Monster Cup.
Monster Cup. Yeah.
No, they're not doing that anymore, but they do another one called the SMX.
Oh, that's what it's taken over. Yeah.
Meant to be like a motocross, supercross hybrid type thing. And there's three races there and the winner of that gets $1 million plus. I think each round they make a fortune as well.
It's crazy. So, who took it out? Was it Hunter that took it out this year? Or was it Jet?
No, it was Jet. Yeah. Him and Hunter tied, but Jet got it on account back.
Oh, come on. We're going to split the profits there or something. Yeah, two brothers.
I know. Well, it couldn't really be better for them, first and second.
It's not bad, is it?
Yeah. Oh, don't get me wrong. Second was still good prize money. I think it was $500,000 or $600,000 or something for second.
It's massive money.
Massive money. It's really... Well... I mean, out of the motorsports, MotoGP, F1.
Yeah,
it's good that motocross, supercross has got that.
Gotta have it, and like
it's got that, it's got it.
100%, and like you know, you guys are the ones that are really putting your body on the line. Don't get me wrong, MotoGP does and F1 does, but like
not like that though.
Minimal mistake, small mistake, broken wrist, you know, broken shoulder,
yeah,
whatever it
may be, it doesn't always feel that good when. It's more so you like you crash sometimes and you just, where's my bike?
True.
Is it chasing after you most of the time? You know,
landing on you.
Yeah.
You know, stuff that like we spoke about before of Michael Essie like crashed on the downside of a, you know, of that a little drop off jump and he just got ran over 6-7 times or whatever by riders. It's famous footage, but it's like bad to watch at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, it's no good.
I know, it's horrible. But it's motorsport. It's in motorsport. All of them.
And then, you know, we hope, like, obviously with a lot of the things, it was funny through last year, we were talking a lot about Jet, and I'd go to the boys every pod, we're like, oh, how do you think Jet went? Like, one and one. Like, and he went 22-0, whatever it is, and, like, he got, like, 1 30-second news clipping on Channel 9 or whatever it is. Like, the sport really needs to be lifted by the problem is the mainstream media is never going to do it. It literally has to be people like Gypsy Tales and podcast guys or whatever it is, because you know that's where you can get massive followings. And you know, we speak to you and you can kind of figure out in a way like what your personality is like. It's easier than over a Zoom's too hard, you know. So people listen to it and they can kind of understand.
Yeah, what makes you tick
and relate to it. Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's hard. Australians, you know, love ball sports, love AFL, cricket, whatever it may be, that's the majority. And, you know, motorsport people like us, we're all very, very passionate about that. And, unfortunately, it's just, it's not quite as big as what the ball sports
and
are.
And, like, we're just such a smaller nation as well. But it was good to see Etihad Stadium get filled out.
Yeah.
You know, that was a great event.
Yeah. And like that, like Jet and Hunter came and look how many people came to watch him, you know.
That's the draw card, isn't it?
Are doing the right thing for the sport, and it's just gonna take some time, I think. But
really good to see them kind of give back as well and come back to Australia and give back to the fans, because obviously they want to see him ride and do all that stuff as well.
For sure. I was unfortunate about what happened in that second race, but they still got to see the best of Hunter and good racing, and I think just them being there was pretty cool for everybody.
100%. Yeah. And they've done a few things like that. Ricky Carmichael, we call him Cheeseburger Carmichael on this podcast because he blew out for a little bit. So he goes down and he's in for me. He did a few rides, you know, back with Ronnie Mack and those rides back in the day, and it filled out Eddie had. So it's good to see that they're just doing that more consistently as well. And like on a proper supercross track, like they filled out Rod Laver Arena back in the day doing tiny little things, but like Eddie had's like a proper track.
Yeah.
I think it was just his track was apparently a bit slippery and slick. And
yeah, I think because of the rain that they had during the week or whatever it was, the dirt got pretty wet. And I think that there was some solid rocks in there.
Oh, okay.
But from the spectators, you know, like being in the stand, it was still good to watch.
Yeah, that's it. It's all about entertainment value.
Yeah, exactly. That, isn't it? Yeah. So that was one of the first times I've been able to like actually enjoy it and just watch it without.
Yeah.
Well, ever. I've never really been able to watch that. So it was cool.
Nah, that's gross. What do you do other than dirt bike stuff? What else are you into?
I don't get to do a whole lot else, but I really like enjoy surfing. Yep. Mountain biking when we can.
Yep.
Like when we first moved down to Victoria in 2020 and COVID, we lived in on the peninsula right next to Red Hill and stuff. And
oh yeah, gross.
Just spent so much time there in the lockdowns, just pounding laps up and down the hill. And just like I said to you, like I'm a big person for extreme sports, I suppose action sports. So just anything in that regard, I do enjoy it, but we don't get much time.
Yeah, it's motocross life, isn't it?
It is. Other than that, I just lots of off bike training fills out a lot of the days, and just some work around the house, really.
Standard stuff.
Yeah, we got an old miner's cottage, so just plenty of work on that.
That's cool.
Plod along with, which I have never really done anything like that. So learning as I go, but it's been pretty fun, to be honest.
It's good to change it up as well and do something different, like. Yep. I think bikes and motocross could, especially if your schedule just take over your whole life. You need an escape.
You get fully consumed by it. And I'm bad for that. Like I live and breathe it, love it. Even when I'm hurt or not racing, I still go and watch everything, you know. So when I can, I do try and do something different. I think this has been a pretty cool project, having something to do at home. And it's like one of those things, you live in a rental, you don't want to do anything in case you ruin it.
That's right.
You can do whatever you want.
That's cool. True. That's a good thing. And then, like, you know, going out and surfing is a good change up.
And it's also, like, a good thing to switch off from motorbikes. And, you know, you still get that fear factor of
big waves,
shark, reef, whatever it may be. And the guys that I go out with sometimes are pretty good and not that scared of a big swell. So I'm sort of out there out of my depth, but it's fun. Like I enjoy it a lot. It's one of those things, like I guess you get that same adrenaline rush, same as mountain biking, especially if you're doing the enduro side of things or whatever it may be. And
buddy oath, like those big wave surfer guys, I was just watching a thing on them, like Laird Hamilton, crazy man. It's like surfing buildings.
It's nuts what they do. And like the hold down they get if they do go down.
I know.
It's wild.
And like they can black out.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Like they're not. I put them in the same category as like Ironman TT races.
Yeah.
You know, just death wish.
Man, and especially because it's not that deep and there's a big reef underneath.
Yeah.
Whatever it may be, like it's scary.
And it's like just black. Can't see anything. Can't breathe. I don't have. Don't see any enjoyment in that whatsoever.
A lot of respect to them because that is gnarly.
Gnarly. And like, there's another thing. You got to be fit for that. Like I've seen Laird Hamilton, his training stuff just to do all that. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, to do their breath holds and everything. It's wild, but I love watching it.
It's cool. All that stuff in the Portuguese coast or whatever it is, that famous spot.
Nazaré,
that's it.
However you pronounce it. It's crazy.
Fuck that.
Yeah, I know.
That's... You were too scared to swim in Sydney that time because the waves are too big. Yeah, because I stayed on the beach.
Yeah, because I was going to get shanked by a certain amount of people there. It was dodgy as.
Tom and I got through unscathed.
Yeah, I'm not a swimmer. I'm definitely not a swimmer. You know, I just look at the water. I'm like a cat.
Melbourne's the right place for you. Then.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Exactly.
It's too cold
right.
95% of the time.
Oh, yeah, that's exactly. I don't mind the bay because there's no swell. I'll just go in after like a run or something like that. I'm good, but yeah, proper like surfing stuff like that.
I don't know. It's just, I've always loved the beach, loved that side of things, and something where you just turn off and you actually have to think about something else.
That's right.
You end up in a bit of a pickle, so.
It's true.
It's good.
Nah, it's cool. Mate, thank you for coming on.
No,
it's really appreciate it. It's been a lot of fun. We have a present for you. This is what we give all, I guess.
Shout out to Stacey from HJC Australia for hooking it up.
It is it's not a dirt bike helmet, but it's a road helmet.
No, thank you.
But it's a bit of a present just to say thank you for coming on the podcast. We wrote on it and signed it for you. I'm
trying to find the thing.
It's one of one.
One of one?
Oh, that's awesome.
So we really appreciate you giving your time to us. We always with all our guests.
Thank you so much.
Super nice.
Appreciate it a lot.
It's awesome to get that different perspective as well from an MX guy.
Yep.
First time, and I know you'd be loving it. Yep. Massive into the dirt scene, so that's sick.
It's very, very, very interesting. And, you know, what you've done in your career has been great. We've loved watching it. I've definitely loved watching it, especially with the Des Nation stuff. So, yeah, lovely to meet you.
And nice to meet you guys. Thanks for having me on.
No worries,
it.
Man. We'll keep in contact. And
yeah, definitely. Thanks for the helmet. That's awesome.
No worries, man. Really all good. Cool. Easy, yes. Thanks, guys.
Cheers,
man.
Thanks.
Cheers, man.